Out there, oh, peace is calling in the bonds of love we meet for the world anew.
Welcome to Muffin Talk.
Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is a weekly radio program to which I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion for issues on community programs, social justice, Bible studies, or the Catholic Church. My interviews are done in the studio of Planet FM or via Zoom. Today I've invited Brother Chris Properwell to a Zoom recording for a broadcast. Brother Chris, a warm welcome and hi to our radio program.
Thank you very much, Beate. It is good to be able to meet up again, even if it has to be by Zoom.
Yes. Brother Chris Properwell is a Champagne brother, originally from the area of Bluff, the South Island of New Zealand. For many years, he's been working in the Pacific and in East Timor. More recently, Brother Chris has returned from the Philippines. His main field of work in these countries have been education and mission. Brother Chris, I understand that you are very interested in ecology. From the 31st of October to the 12th of November, the UN Climate Change Conference COP26 has been held in Glasgow, Scotland. The conference is being held despite most countries in the world struggling with COVID-19 and its economic impact on the world economy. From your point of view as a religious brother, science teacher, and missionary, do you think that it is wise to hold this conference now?
Well, really, Beate, I think that it's necessary to hold the conference as soon as possible because the situation that the Earth is in is dire. And it's only going to get worse unless it is possible for peoples of the world to work together and the governments have to represent the people. So even though we have the crisis of COVID together with our climate crisis, it's good to have them together because people are aware we are in a very bad situation and we have to take action. So it's wonderful to see, particularly young people, saying, not telling governments what to do, but telling them to do something about this, make use of the science. So I think the situation is God-given, give us the chance to act because we have to.
And it's COP26, so there's quite a few have happened already. So people are losing faith, I think.
Yes, losing faith in what governments will do because governments are so focused on, well, they have to be able to retain their power and they have to keep people from going wild and getting so upset by the restrictions that are put on them. Like at present, the COVID restrictions here in New Zealand are very rigid and people are getting tired of that, particularly seeing others who don't pay any attention to them. So governments will really only respond to pressure, and that kind of pressure needs to come from ordinary people, not just from an organized anti-government group or something like that. So I think we are moving in that direction. And to see young people linking up all over the world, it isn't a matter of a few disaffected people. It's a matter of a whole grassroots movement that want to have change.
I can tell that you're very passionate for the care of our environment. Brother Chris, are there any practical examples that come to your mind when we talk about the care of the earth?
Well, again, people are highlighting the fact that we've got serious problems with, say, pollution. It is a serious problem. The fact that global warming is largely caused by our use of fossil fuels and the cutting down of trees or forests so that we are increasing carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, which we know simply leads to warming of the atmosphere. So we have the problems then of global warming. We have the problems of pollution. We also have the problem of rubbish, particularly plastic rubbish. People are so conscious of this now. And I think people are ready to act as long as they can be shown how they can act in a way which will not destroy their lifestyle, but it might require a simplification. These crises coming together is going to help the earth because the problem is a global one. It's not just each area has got its own problems. The whole world has these problems.
Brother Chris, you worked as a teacher and missionary in many countries, as I mentioned. And you were recently in the Philippines. Well, when I think of the Philippines, I also think of huge cities and huge dumping grounds and people looking for something that is still valuable in the dumping grounds. And you were just mentioning rubbish. What did you find out in the Philippines, or why did you go to the Philippines?
Well, initially I went there just to help out with looking after young brothers in training. They have to do their university studies, and in part I'd be teaching, particularly ecology, so that I had the chance both to develop my ideas, because I have been interested in it for many years, and also to have the chance to help with the administration. Because with people so restricted in travel, it meant that if somebody could get there and could be helpful, that would be great. I was supposed to be returning in May of last year, but because of the COVID problems, both in Philippines and here in New Zealand, there wasn't any way to do that. So I simply had to say, well, I'll stay another year and keep going with the teaching. So it gave me the chance to develop my ideas further. But in fact, it was an unusual lockdown that extended to nearly 18 months before I finally got back to New Zealand a couple of months ago.
Can you tell us something about your experience in the Philippines and in regards of ecology?
Well, I saw some of the dreadful things happening there. The Philippines is a very poor country, and of course multinational companies, particularly concerned with mining and with the extraction of minerals of any sort, at the mercy of companies there. They make promises about how they will look after the environment and will make sure that the local people don't suffer from it, but you just have to go to see it and to see how those promises are not being kept. And the government there is in no position to enforce them, because so often members of the government are in the pay of the different organizations, the companies. And so that means the corruption that's so widespread there prevents anything from happening. So you just end up with the situation gets worse, even though there's great promises of we will clean this up, we will solve these problems. So to go to a place like Smoky Mountain, it's called, out of Manila. Manila itself has got a population of 25 million, depending on the city. The city itself, Metro Manila, is about 12.5 million, and there's a whole lot more dependent on it in the provinces immediately adjacent.
It's already five times the size of New Zealand, population-wise.
Five times the size of New Zealand anyway, and very, very big. It must be about the sixth biggest conglomeration of people in the world at the present time. And this Smoky Mountain is a rubbish heap, but it's so big it really can be called a mountain. And the number of people who live on it and by it and scavenge there for what they can get, and of course their health conditions, their education situation is fairly hopeless. That whole thing needs to be cleaned up completely, and that would require government action on a very large scale, which in the present way of doing things isn't going to happen. So those people are condemned to a miserable life, and it'll be a short one.
Brother Chris, you were telling me earlier about something that you saw there that was called EcoBricks. What is that?
Yes, it was something I think it has developed in India more than anywhere else. In the course of what I was doing, I tried to pick up video clips, because I have found that in the teaching these days, especially if you're going to do it remotely by Zoom, then people have become very visual. Maybe 30, 40 years ago, it was possible for someone's attention span, for young people particularly, probably about 20 seconds, something like that. They were saying that in a song, unless you have something that's going to catch people's attention within 20 seconds, then you'll lose them and the song will never become popular. But today, that attention span has dropped to around about 10 seconds.
And so
the same thing occurs then with regard to watching things. I find that if I use a video from, say, 5 to 10 minutes, no more than that, it's enough to hold people's attention. and then you can talk about it. So I had to learn the process of how do you edit existing videos and how do you make your own in trying to prepare materials for a project that we hope to get started next year in Fiji of training in ecology. So being in Manila gave the opportunity for that, and I think the chance is there to develop ideas. I've tried already, given a course in it, and provided that for some schools to see if they're able to make use of ecological teaching.
Tell us, did you use eco-bricks there? And what are
the eco-bricks? It was come about because of the amount of plastic rubbish. And the two things were empty bottles and that type of thing, those bottles, and also plastic waste, wrappings and all of that sort of thing. And, of course, at the moment, they are just flooding various parts of the world. And so people had the idea there, okay, take the bottles, stuff them full of plastics that can't be recycled, and that makes it into something that's solid. So you can use it just like a brick. So you can put plaster in between. You can have reinforcing rods. So apart from building simple structures like furniture using these eco bricks, you can also build houses. And I've even seen a two-story building built with it. And they work. And, of course, by covering it with plaster and the rest of it, you wouldn't know that the bricks are anything other than ordinary bricks. I'm not sure if councils in a country like New Zealand will approve of such a thing, but you could certainly use it for small structures. But the important thing of it was a way of recycling both the plastic bottles and the plastic waste, and therefore it was reducing the waste problem.
Because you had the plastic anyways and the bottles anyways, and it was just combining them and using them rather than having a big mountain of plastic bottles and plastic film.
That's right, yes. And it's gone further in the sense that that's something you can do on the village level. Individual people can do that. But then if you go to get a small machine of some kind, you can make paving blocks. So I have a video from Kenya that has shown the way in which the paving blocks can be made, and they're very strong. And then you can go further. Some of the industrialized countries are able to make use of plastic waste for recycling into plastic bottles. And so I think the essential thing about plastics is not to get rid of them, but to make sure they do not turn into waste. A couple of days ago, we were talking about the business of groceries, that type of thing. Now, the single-use plastic bag contributes about 1.6 kilograms of carbon dioxide to the atmosphere when it's made. And that's very small compared with the billions of tons that we're putting put in every year. Now, a paper bag would use about three times as much, produces about three times as much carbon dioxide. And so really its effect on the environment is about three times as great. Now, if you can keep reusing plastic paper bags, three times, for example, for one plastic bag, then that's fine. But plastic paper bags get wet, and so often they don't last very long. So
you
really,
can't wash them, really?
That's right. They're not a great solution. And yeah. Then once you go to a cotton tote bag, something like that, well, that produces 272 kilograms of carbon dioxide. So you'd have to use it about 131 times to make it as suitable, as useful, or as least harmful in the environment as one single-use plastic bag.
Well, now, I hope that the people do that. And also I think that usually these bags are so strong that you can use them for a lot more different purposes.
That's what you've got to do. That's right. And the plastic bags, about 40% of them are actually used more than once. But it looks like the best combination of all this is to have a heavier duty plastic bag with handles, for example, and you use that as your grocery bag, and it recycles and can be air, as you were saying. And I think that kind of thing is probably the long-term answer. Yeah. And so really, when people say cut out single-use plastic bags, they're probably going in not the best direction.
Well, I remember in the 1990s when there were some countries that were producing bags out of Tetra Pak, and they looked really nice because they were so colorful. And I assume that these EcoBricks will also look very colorful because you have all kind of plastic that is already colored for promotion purposes.
Yes, very true. Very likely, of course, that EcoBricks are going to be covered when they're in use, particularly with housing. But when you use it for around a garden or something like that, yes, it is quite spectacular to look at. And these bags, I agree, that sort of plastic bag is the right kind to have, the heavier duty ones. So single-use plastic bags, they've got their place, but it should be a... And then as long as we can recycle them in some form, reuse them, repurpose them, anything of that kind, that's going to be the solution for plastics rather than simply stop using them.
So it's really not about the product. It's about the way that you use it and how often you use it. It's about more about against the throwaway culture.
That's right. Yeah, and the throwaway culture has really spread. We've got a throwaway culture even with regard to life, human life now. Abortion has become widespread, and the whole acceptance of that widely is simply throw away. If you don't want it, throw it away. And I think the same thing is creeping into the euthanasia debate, and where you've got lives that people would judge economically useless. So why not encourage them to commit suicide? It's very much about economics, isn't it?
Rather than life. Being part of the cycle of life. And in a way you can say, well, if you can't do certain things anymore, there might be something else you can do. And
that's right.
I think that's the way in previous generations, even... Yeah, even I remember when we had something that was broken, we looked for a different purpose. And I had a shelf the other day, and I wanted to throw it away, but then I realized it's perfect for growing strawberries in between the shelves. So I put it on the ground and I reuse it as a box for my strawberries.
Yes, exactly. We can repurpose things in all sorts of ways without having to throw them away. So when you look at any type of material, anything at all really in our life, you look at the whole lifespan of it.
Yes.
And so the plastic bag, for example, at the beginning it's very, very good, certainly not very much harm at all.
Yes.
But if it becomes waste, it is harmful. Now, you've got the same thing, say, with regard to the ideas about electric cars at the moment. They seem to be a good thing and seem to be a solution to much of our problem of carbon dioxide going into the air. But when you go to the Philippines and you realize the electricity is made from coal, largely, and therefore electric cars does not solve any problem at all. It might only make it worse. And then as well as that, the battery technology is a big problem because it uses minerals that have to be mined, and some of those are very scarce, so the problem of supply of them may be difficult. And then can the batteries be recycled? Parts of them can be at present, but parts cannot. And if we increase the battery usage, we're going to be increasing the problems of disposal afterwards. And even the little household batteries, they cause harm to the environment when they're just thrown away. We have a very limited form of recycling in New Zealand, but in some countries that is big business. And so a real effort is being made. But once again, the disposal of batteries once their lifespan is finished is a big pollutant.
And, well, I think that it's important to look at how was that product being produced and how is it used and what happens afterwards. So I think that if you look only at the time that you use it, the way that it was sold to you, then you're missing out the origins and where it goes to, and which means that maybe you wouldn't even buy it if you knew how it was produced and how it was gotten rid of.
Yes, and you are simply going to make false decisions when you don't know what is the effect on the environment of its manufacture and its disposal. If you only think in terms of the actual usage, well, that's very limited. And so you can end up with the way in which countries many countries now have been saying we must ban single-use plastic bags. That's not really a solution because it's turning people into buying rubbish bags, where previously the single-use bags could become the rubbish bag. So you've got to try and look through the whole life cycle.
Yes, and I think that some attempts in this perspective are done when you look at the collection for old clothes and for the op shops, where people who have something that they want to get rid of, they can give it to the op shops, and the op shops then can sell it further to somebody else or give it away. And I think that's also part of that real cycle.
Yes, very much so. And in some countries, unfortunately, particularly the USA, very good clothing is just discarded. And I was able in Tonga to have people importing used clothing. And you had excellent... What you do is, of course, train your people to be able to sew new clothing from this beautiful material. So you ended up with very quality garments that it's all come from what would have been waste.
Yes.
So recycling has been done, and some of it's been done in a very, very good way. But this now has to become widespread. It's really got to be looked at for everything. When I had a class within the Philippines that I took right through an ecological course, I had them as their project. They had to research the whole life cycle of some particular area. So some were dealing with plastic and the bags that are used to carry groceries, that type of thing. Another group was looking at the problem of the cars and the fossil fuel usage, what alternatives are there, that sort of thing. Others were looking at different aspects of the environment, what are the factors that cause global warming, not just the ones, minor ones. So they gave whole research projects on that and came up with some most interesting ideas. And I think young people can do that. They're idealistic and very often will not be bound by the things that we learned. We're older, we learn things in our youth, and we probably take those for granted. But people who don't take those for granted come up with new solutions. And I found this was a wonderful inspiration for me, and also to try to get other people, same thing. If you're at a school, make use of the ideology, the idealism, that's a better word, the idealism of youth to come up with new solutions and possibilities. And who knows, some of them are going to become worldwide innovations that are dealing with these problems that we've got. So it's not only COP26 where we can get help. We can get help at a much lower level in ordinary people.
As Pope Francis always says, keep dreaming. So if you don't dream, if you don't have a vision, then you don't get anywhere.
That's right. No development can take place if you can't dream about it first. Makes me admire.
All these stories of Jules Verne, the authors who were thinking of utopic ways of the future, and people said, well, that's stupid. But most of it is reality today.
That's right. I very much enjoy science fiction because there's so many ideas coming into there. If we remember that the idea of mobile phones came about from Star Trek, the communicator that they used in the TV show, and some engineers got together and said, we can make this happen. And so they have. They haven't managed to transport people yet, but they've done everything else that was done in Star Trek, and they've done a few more things as well. So science fiction turned into science fact.
It would be interesting if we could be beamed around the world so we don't have to go through quarantines.
Yes, that's right. However, I think that vaccination numbers, as they increase, then people who are vaccinated will get flu, sure, but it won't be any worse than the ones we've had in the past.
Yeah.
So it means that we don't have to let it disrupt our life cycle the way it has so far.
Well, and we are lucky in New Zealand because we receive the Pfizer vaccine, which is a vaccine with a very good result, because in some other countries they are using vaccines that are a lot less efficient. So, but any vaccine is better than no vaccine because, yes, you want to protect the environment and be around for a while.
That's right. And, of course, human lives have been greatly harmed by the whole process. But in the Philippines, the only vaccine available in the early days there was the Sinovac Chinese one. And even the Chinese don't use it because its effectiveness is quite low.
Yes.
And compared with the other ones, it's so much greater. So the poor Philippines has got some vaccination going on, but the quality of that's not very good. And the numbers being vaccinated still quite small. So at present, it's the virus is spreading out of control, and they keep trying to have lockdowns. It's been locked down really since middle of March of last year, and they just it's not working. It yes. still spreads.
I think it only works if everybody works together. It's the same with the environment. Brother Kieran, Brother Chris, you're from the same community as Brother Kieran.
Yes.
Brother Chris, just one sentence about the indigenous people, because we're already reaching the end of the interview. But regarding indigenous people and their way of using things in the environment, is there any knowledge that can help us preserving the environment even today with a much higher population than the indigenous people ever had to face?
Yes, well, indigenous people, of course, could use smaller areas of land. I worked for many years in Tonga and took a great interest in their agriculture, the traditions of it. What alternatives were there to pesticides and fertilizers, that type of thing? And, of course, by having crop rotation, and by understanding how companion gardening, you plant certain crops together with others so that pests are kept aside, you don't need the expense of the chemicals, and also you don't have the environmental harm. So I learned a great deal from them, and any country I go to, I try to talk to the old people. What are the medicine ways? Because there's so many treatments that are every bit as effective as modern drugs, but they... Drugs are convenient. They come in bottles. You buy them at the shop.
I think that we have to do another interview on the indigenous knowledge that that you were mentioning. But I just thought, yes, it's important to remember that there have been solutions, and we might have to go sometimes every now and then, go a step backwards to find the way forward.
That's right. It's not the most convenient, yeah. But it becomes the cheapest and the most effective, and it's sustainable. Yeah. So we really do have to look at folk wisdom throughout the world.
Yes. Thank you very much, Brother Chris. It has been really a good way to think of the ending of the COP26, and that we'll have some success out of it. Thank you very much.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much, Beate. It's been a pleasure.
And just a few notes about what's coming up with Titiponamu Study and Joy. So on the 25th of November, 2 o'clock to 3:30, we'll have Letitia Putin-Badat facilitating the second part of our session on Ignatian Imaginative Contemplation. And then we'll have also preparing ourselves for Christmas. We have two further programs. On Monday, the 22nd of November, Brother Kieran will give a presentation on the infancy narratives. And on Monday, the 6th of December, I will give a presentation on the nativity scenes. All sessions will be held on Zoom, so we don't depend on any alert levels. We just depend on the internet. All events are available on the website, and please register at info@studyjoy.nz or check out the website. Kia kaha, keep safe, and thank you very much, Brother Chris.
Thank you, Beate.
Out there, oh, peace is calling in the bonds of love we meet for the world.